UEG Talks, gastroenterology to go. Welcome to our GI podcast. Listen for fresh insights and perspectives in science, education, and professional development.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UEG Talks. Hope you're doing well so far this week. I'm Pradeep Mundre, and I'm your host for today. Now, a couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to attend one of its kind symposia, the Complications in Endoscopy Symposium at Stoke University Hospitals, organized by Dr. Shreesha Hebbar. When Shreesha first asked me to give a talk at the symposium, it was like a wow factor for me. And I said, oh, you're organizing an entire symposium dedicated to complications in endoscopy. And I wasn't sure what's in stock. When I attended the symposium, during the 2 days, every talk, every discussion, every moment was thought-provoking, significantly evoking emotions in all of those who attended. And I thought it was such a unique and novel idea. And the response from all of those involved, you know, people who were presenting, people who were attending, was just out of the world. It was very touching and moving. You know, whether you listen to the patients who came there and talk about the complications they've been through, the doctors that have been affected with a complication or with an investigation, or the trainees, the talks from solicitors and the psychologists. And I thought it was just amazing. And in life, I think as an endoscopist, we all, and a gastroenterologist, of course, we all encounter complications, and it affects us in different ways, depending on the severity of the complications and the kind of person you are. We all deal with things very differently, and it affects everyone, patients, endoscopists, trainees, relatives, and hospitals and organizations. Now, today's discussion is about this topic on complications in endoscopy. And our guest today is Dr. Shreesha Hebbar, who's a consultant gastroenterologist and director of endoscopy at Royal Stoke University Hospitals in the UK. Shreesha organized the first UK Complications in Endoscopy Symposium recently and is also the quality improvement lead for the British Society of Gastroenterology and has previously served as a BSG endoscopy secretary amongst his various different roles. Welcome to the podcast, Shreesha.
Thanks, Pradeep and UEG, for this invitation on a topic which I'm very passionate about, and I'm looking forward to have this discussion with you.
Thanks, Shreesha. Certainly, you are passionate because the recent symposium, what I saw there. Shreesha, maybe we can start off with your own experience. You've been performing endoscopies for a long time. Probably would have been a long journey for me for the first day you held your endoscope to performing possibly some of the most complex HPB interventions these days. Can you tell us your experience of your first complication? May not be yours, that you came across. And how was your reaction at that time? What did you experience at that time? How did you deal with that?
Right. Strangely, Pradeep, my first ever complication in endoscopy was when I had never held the scope before, you know. So I was a general medical trainee going back 20 years ago. And I was doing my stint in GI at the time. So on one day, I walked into the endoscopy to speak to my registrar to discuss about a patient from the ward. And, you know, during these times, when we're doing a PEC procedure, we always two people do it together. There's one who's doing the endoscopic part, one who's doing the abdominal part. So strangely, 20 years ago, on that day, my registrar was doing the procedure all by himself. He was doing a bit of a balancing act with the endoscope on his umbilicus on his shoulder and doing the abdominal part by himself. And I just walked in and he said to me, can you just pull this peg and help me out? And I just went there and I pulled it. I tugged it. And the next thing I know, it was in the peritoneum. Right. So this was a very good example, which I quote in all our courses as well, of a good example of an unconscious incompetence, wherein I didn't know what the procedure was, what the skill required, and what the knowledge was. So this was, as we say, in our learning curve, we start from the unconscious incompetence, but obviously I didn't want a complication to be as part of my learning as an unconscious incompetence. So I think saying that, I think, you know, in UK or in anywhere else, hopefully this doesn't happen anymore. I think our training programs have become very, very good. And especially in UK, and as you and I know, I think we are very proud of how our training in endoscopy has been in this country and how we are leading the world as how the training programs should be.
Yeah. So that didn't put you off from joining gastroenterology, Tricia. You're still performing some complex HPV interventions. So it was inspirational for you rather than putting you off from that episode. Okay. So Tricia, a complication in endoscopy is not just, you know, a massive bleed or a perforation. And there are probably different domains or facets to this. As gastroenterologists, you would just think about these complications, but can you outline the different domains of complications within endoscopy, what we go through?
Yeah, you're right, Pradeep. I think as soon as we say complication, the first thing which comes to our mind is the procedure-related one, like bleeding, perforation, pancreatitis. But I think there are different facets to it. As you know, that there is also the MIS lesion. There is a lot of focus on it recently, which is a good thing. You know, we have one of the key performance indicators now for the unit is about the post-colonoscopy cancer rate. And also in UK, there has been good amount of work done recently on post-endoscopy upper GI cancer. So the focus should be on minimizing this as much as possible. And we also have, unfortunately, a delayed booking or booking errors. And we have seen this more and more during the post-COVID times as well. And then there can be several factors which contributes to complication. For example, sedation, human factors, etc. So there are different elements to a complication and just not the procedure-related ones.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that the delays due to booking or complications secondary to poor quality, so to say, of endoscopy would also be considered as complication. And I'm glad there's more and more focus on this from the GI community and elsewhere. So I guess this will only get bigger in the future in terms of quality. I think we've innovated quite a lot in terms of advanced procedures, but we should never forget the core quality of basic endoscopy procedures. Tricia, let's talk about the first-line complication, the major complications that you encounter, you know, major bleeding and perforation. Let's talk about the first moments after a complication with these, with the focus on these. And I've experienced it myself. And let's say after a major bleed or perforation during a procedure, you get an immediate sense of unease and your heart beats fast. That's normal stress response. And I guess stress response is there to provide us the tools to deal with the situation better. However, we all deal with this differently, and it can become overpowering or overwhelming for some of us. And then your performance, instead of stress response helping you to deal with this, your body and mind gives up. And there's immediately I don't know what happens to the thought process. You may not react properly in a most adequate way. So can you tell us what are the first actions someone should take when they encounter this? And what do you think should happen?
Yes, Pradeep, I think we are all humans and every one of us will go through these emotions and having the stress response. And obviously, the more experienced you get and your mind works on working on this, and with experience, you tend to become much more calmer. But I think everyone can prepare for this. Everyone can develop the mindfulness to become calmer and keep calm in the room right from the beginning. And the key to this is preparation. When I say preparation, I think there has been a lot of focus, thankfully, just like in surgery, now in endoscopy as well, wherein we have a good discussion on pre-procedure with the whole team. There is a briefing between the team as to what procedures we are doing. And it's important for all of us to treat every procedure as a potential complication and be prepared for it. I think having all your accessories ready, making sure that your nurses and your assistants are trained in those accessories, and if there are any doubt, to go through that pre-procedure makes it much more easier, as in life, when you are prepared, you can deal with any eventualities better. And similarly, as in endoscopy as well, if you are prepared very well as what are the potential things can go wrong, then you can deal with it when it happens. And I think it's important for us to be calmer at the time, I think, because that reflects and that also rubs on our assistants and endoscopists. If you're calmer and they are calmer and it becomes a part and parcel of the procedure, and you'll have a better outcome. And one of the things which I've also learned is that however experienced you are, always get somebody into the room. It doesn't have to be a colleague who does the same procedure. It could be anyone else. I think just having another individual in the room helps a lot.
Yeah, that's very true, Shrisha. I guess as a senior consultant, you may be happy to deal with this, but getting somebody makes a sort of massive difference. And I think that reassurance that you get that you're making the right choice and right decision is very important in that situation. So you normally do you normally call your colleague from next door or a surgeon or anybody for that matter? You're happy to call anyone. Is that right?
Yeah, I think your first port of call is always somebody who you work with regularly on that procedure. But obviously, if they're busy, I just say, please, can you call anyone who's in the next room? I think just getting somebody else, it just makes it much more easier. I think because you think you're not stressed, but you obviously are. I think there's always some experienced people around or even not an experience in that procedure. It makes a lot of difference, to be honest. They can be helping you with accessories or anything else. So an extra hand is always helpful.
That's true. And I guess the way you deal with the situation is different from the other person. And everyone's perspective is important in that situation.
Exactly.
Let's talk about a complication that, let's say, you've been involved in a procedure and the patient develops a delayed complication, which happens when you're not directly in front of the patient. Let's say you've done an ERCP, a complex procedure on Friday. On a Sunday, the patient comes back to the emergency department with either major pancreatitis or a major bleed. Let's say you're made aware. What would you do? Do you just sit back and chill or just continue with your life from that week? Or do you have a certain way of dealing with this? And what preparations do you make or educate the patient to look out for these? So what's your practice?
I think my personal opinion, I think that true delayed complications is very, very rare. I think most often what happens is it's an under-recognized complication at the time of the procedure. And then sometimes it is the dismissive attitude or it is an optimism bias from the endoscopist or the patient in the recovery period, because the patient's also keen to go home. And when you ask about the symptoms, they might underplay their symptoms, or you are keen to make sure that they go home and that your procedure has gone out well. So you are also optimism that this has all gone well. So sometimes in this, you might miss out on the potential complication which has happened at that time. And these are the patients who present as a delayed complications later. So I think this is actually a difficult situation because you can't be very well prepared for this. I know we all give them information, leaflet. We all give them contact numbers to call during the daytime. We give them reports for them to go. And then if there are difficulties to come back to the accident and emergencies. But then patients tend to sit along for a longer time because they're still having this optimism bias that this should be fine. And also in this present healthcare situations wherein if they have to go to the ED, they have to stay there for a longer time. So they present very late. And even when they present late, the care they get is not the same as the care which happens if you keep them suspecting that this could be a potential complication and manage them. So again, we have burnt our fingers and have learned my personally lessons as well. So my personal attitude at this time is that with our experience, if you think that something has gone wrong, then there is a potentially something has gone wrong. So if to keep the patient in the hospital and getting a CT scan if required is a much more better way of dealing things than getting this patient discharged and they present later as a delayed complication.
Yeah. And when they do come into the hospital, Tricia, let's say under a surgical colleague or anyone else for that matter, what's your approach? Do you go see the patient? Because they're not under your care in that episode. So what's your approach to such a situation?
And again, that's what, again, there are a lot of things which doesn't go right when patients present a delayed complication. But again, you might not even know that the patient has been admitted under the surgeons. I think, again, we have been emphasizing to our surgeons to have that communication with us, I think, to inform us if any of these patients have come under them. And if we know that the patient has been admitted under the surgeon, then I always make a point to go and see the patient and speak to the family once. I think most of the times, whether it is a complaint or a litigation which happens later because of a complication and also a serious outcome of a complication, is not because the patients or the family wants to gain something out of it. It mainly happens because I think because of the mistrust, and that happens mainly because of the lack of communication. Most of the time, even if the complication leads to a bad outcome, but if the communication from the endoscopist and the team has been excellent from the beginning with the patient and the relatives, I think you never have to deal with significant complaints or litigations. I think it's mainly the lack of communication which leads to that.
Yeah, meeting those patients face-to-face, you know, I have a habit to see them, well, maybe not be on a daily basis, at least on alternative days, to kind of keep them up to date, kind of explain to them. Because the mother team or the home team that are looking after the patient, they would explain a little bit more. But I think because it's a complication from a procedure that you had undertaken, explaining from that perspective will bring on a lot of trust between the patients and yourself. And I certainly feel that's a much better way. I know when I was training, my mentor Bjorn used to call it the walk of shame, which is not the case, but it is the term that he used, which I found it funny. But we all need to do that. We all need to see our patients and explain to them and apologize, I guess. Complications are part of the procedures that we do, but saying sorry, it goes a long way, I think.
Oh, definitely. I think it's very important to be very transparent about it and be apologetic about what has happened. And even though it was an unintentional one, but the fact that the patient has been suffering because of this, it's important for us to acknowledge it and apologize for it.
Yeah, just being human really helps. Okay, Shrisha, moving on to, you said preparation is important to anticipate complications, and part of that is consent process, which is a bit difficult topic. And I feel it's more of an art and a bit of fine balance between explaining of patients about the procedure, but at the same time, patients are already stressed when they attend these procedures, and bombarding them with loads of scary things about complications may not go well sometimes. Consent processes are all as much about reassuring them as much as giving that information. But also, we have to protect ourselves medically, legally, and we have to be honest and vulnerable at the same time. So what is an appropriate consent, in brief? I know this is a big topic. And how far down the rabbit hole that you explain about the consequences of complications to our patients?
Yeah, as you rightly say, this is a huge topic. And again, if you go by the definition, is appropriate consent is something where the patient makes an informed decision based on all the consequences of the procedure which they're made aware of. And then the patient has got the mental capacity to understand that. But I think this is very difficult to gauge for us, to that they can understand every aspect of it, of the procedure. But at the same time, just because you have to give all the information, just rattling out every potential complication to the patient and getting the patient's signature is not an appropriate consent. And at the same time, sometimes we have also a pre-written sticker with all the complications, and just sticking on it on the form and getting the signature is not appropriate consent. So I think it's important. The balance is not always easy, but at the same time, I think most important thing here I would say is that your indication has to be appropriate. I think if the indication is appropriate, even if you mention death for a straightforward diagnostic gastroscopy, patient wouldn't mind it. I know there are each one of us have a different way of delivering our consent information. There are some people who consent for death, for even for diagnostic procedures, and some people who consent death for only where the thing is a complex procedures like ERCP. The patients actually, if you ask them, none of them mind if you mention about death, because if you think the procedure is indicated, and that's the most important key here, is to make sure the procedure is appropriate and given consent the patient, which is also not only appropriate for the procedure, but also appropriate for them for the situation. For example, I give you an example. You were in the complication symposium, and we had the patient there who complained against me 10 years ago because for an amplectomy-related complication. Even though I had thought my consent was elaborate and I had given every little information, but the patient was stumped, mainly because when the patient asked me whether I can go for a cruise in 2 to 3 weeks' time, and I said, yes, you can definitely go because you'll be going home right after the procedure at the end of the day and you'll recover in 2 or 3 days' time. And for the patient, in hindsight, all the information which I had given was negated just by the fact that I said, you should be able to go to the cruise in 2 to 3 weeks' time. So it's not about giving the information, but it should also be appropriate for the patient at that time.
Yeah, so proportionate. Yeah, that's well said, Tricia. I think it's a bit of an art, and I guess with experience we all learn. And explaining that indication, thanks for pointing it out. Explaining the indication, and a lot of my patients are not sure why they're there. Why am I even removing this polyp? So I think explaining that really, really helps. Thanks for that. Okay, I think for the purposes of time, we're going to conclude the part one of this discussion, and we'll be back next week for part two to continue the conversation.